Well, I will stay standing. Well, I'll begin by standing up, but I will sit down in a moment. But as I'm introducing this session, I'll speak to you this way. Also, to explain on your program, it says that Krish is chairing this session. For a variety of reasons, one, that we were hoping to have a young care leaver with us, and that didn't come off, and we were conscious that only having... You are a care leaver, but you're... and you're young. you tick all the boxes, Len. That we didn't just want two people on the panel. The main reason, of course, is that it seemed difficult to contain Krish in a chairing capacity, and the thought that giving him a microphone and asking him not to make a contribution would be ridiculous. So what we wanted to do is give Krish more space to talk about his experiences as well. So at the last minute, I'm going to chair this session. The way the session is going to work, just so you you understand it, is that these three expert people are going to tell us that something of their own story, their own experience, and the things that matter to them, and from their kind of notion of what it means to be a child in care. There'll be a panel conversation between us, and then we will open it up for you to ask questions. Now, I know that there is a Greenbelt tradition when the microphone comes round for people to miraculously get out of their back pocket a large soapbox, which they stand on and then kind of stand on and pontificate for a long period of time. All right. If you want to do that, please find another tent. In this venue, in this occasion, what we want to do is to give you an opportunity to ask a question of people here who have some considerable experience and knowledge and to be able to share that with you. There will be time, if you want to go and have a conversation in more depth and more detail with anybody, to do that outside of this venue. We know that in this venue right now, there are people who have already considerable experience of this subject matter. Some of you are foster carers, some of you are planning to be foster carers, some of you are adopted, some of you want to adopt, some of you are social workers, some of you are very much involved in this area of work and you have an expertise and understanding and knowledge. Some of you don't know very much at all. And in that regard, we want to give space for everyone to have that reflection and that opportunity to learn something, to reflect, and to go away from this session better informed and more committed to do something positive. We also want in this session actually to get a balance right. In the work in the Children's Society, if you come to our GSOR stand, you'll see a potted history of the Children's Society that began over 130 years ago with our founder establishing a form of foster care, of actually looking at children who are destitute in the East End of London and looking to provide an alternative to the workhouse for those children. Over the years, over the decades, we have changed, we've altered the way in which we deliver those services, but always being core to our understanding of the needs of children is that every child matters. That phrase used to matter as well. But every child matters. And every child deserves the opportunity to have a fulfilled life. And the way in which we do that now, Lucy will explain some of that kind of work. But what we don't want to do either is to get in a situation where we are demonizing anybody or anything. That in the stories that we have to tell and a lot of the work that we do, we are very conscious of the limitations of the systems that are in place to support these children and young people. We're very conscious of the failings at times of some of those systems. But we're also equally very conscious of the enormous effort, love, energy, and commitment that comes from the individuals that put a human face to those systems. And the last thing I think that any of us would want to do in this session is for any of you that are part of that system, and in some way we are all part of that system, to leave this place feeling as though you've been blamed. And I would just say this to you now, if you are involved in the front line and supporting these young people, we salute you. So, on that basis, what we're going to do is this. I'm going to ask each of our contributors in turn to speak for a few minutes, to give us a brief account of their own sense and circumstance and kind of something to say about kind of this theme. I'm then going to do a quick icebreaker with you after that before we open up in a more detailed conversation with the panel. And as I say, then we'll come to a point where there's an opportunity for you to ask your questions. So we're going to begin with Krish because he's sitting next to me and I'm going to take a seat. And Krish, you have roughly 5 minutes.
Oh, okay. Well, good afternoon, everybody. It's lovely to be with you. It's my first visit to Greenbelt, so delight to be here. I thought there'd be more mud, so I'm excited about that. There was. Okay, fine. So I'm passionate about this subject. Firstly, because we are foster parents and adoptive parents. We had three birth kids in 3 years, and we were under 30. Not quite sure how that happened, although apparently there's seminars about that kind of stuff here. And my wife and I felt we had more capacity to show love to kids in our lives. And so we became foster parents. And we have currently three additional children in our household, one adopted daughter and two long-term foster children. And it really turned our lives upside down in the best possible way. We've had kids turn up at our house who have been removed from their families while they were at school. So they would go into school on a normal day and then be called to the head teacher's office and be told they're not allowed to go home that day. Well, okay, can I go say goodbye to my parents? No. Can I go pet the family dog? No. Can I say goodbye to my sister? No. You're going to go with this lady. She's called a social worker, and she's going to take you to another family. Who is this other family? Well, you don't know them, but they're lovely. They're going to be fine. Well, how long will I be there? Well, you'll be there for however long it takes. And so these kids will turn up in our house sometimes with just their lunchbox and their swim kit, and they need people that are going to be just brilliantly loving and caring for them because they've had so much trauma, even that day, let alone what's happened to them before. And we just found such a privilege to be able to show some care and compassion to kids that have had not the best start in life. And as we got involved in it, weirdly, I rediscovered that the Bible's got a lot to say about this. When you hear the word worship, you often think about an organ or a band. And when God thinks about worship, according to James chapter 1, verse 27, he thinks about care. Do you know the verse? True religion that God our Father accepts as pure and blameless is to care for widows and orphans in their distress. So we found ourselves reconnecting to God at a deeper level because we were caring for the kinds of people that God shows particular care for. And the more that we got involved in caring for kids, the more we realised how big the issue is. Currently in the UK, there's around 9,000, a shortage of 9,000 foster carers. And there's about 4,500 children waiting to be adopted. And those children are not babies. They're often older children in sibling groups, many of whom have experienced neglect or abuse at home, and they need a long-term forever family. And I did the maths and worked out of churches like yours and mine, there's around 15,000 in the country. So how does that work? How's your maths doing? I don't need every believer in the UK to adopt 100 kids. I just need one family per church to think about extending their family through fostering or adoption. And by family, it could be a single person, could be an older person, it could be a couple, could people who have had kids, could be people that haven't had kids yet. And if we did that, one family per church, we would meet the entire need at the moment, which would be amazing for the kids and really make a difference to our nation. So I've launched a charity called Home for Good, and we have one simple plan. We want to see every child in the UK that needs a forever family find one, either through long-term foster care or through adoption. And I'd love to talk to you more about that, but I think that's my 5 minutes up.
It's good timing. I'd like to pass the microphone on to Lucy.
Thanks. So I'm Lucy, and I work for the Children's Society. And my job is to go and talk to decision makers that make the laws and legislation in this country to try and make them better for children in care and the most disadvantaged, which is a privilege and a joy and also a really big challenge. And I wanted to start my first 5 minutes by telling you a story about a girl that the Children's Society supported to give you kind of an illustration of the type of work that we do as an organisation. So she was called Sarah, and she was in care in the Greater Manchester area. And the Children's Society provided Sarah with what's known as an advocate. And that's someone who makes sure that children in care have their voices heard quite often, and I'm sure we'll hear a lot more about this as we carry on talking. A lot of adults make decisions about those children that are in the care system, and what the advocate does is make sure that her voice is central to any of those decisions. And Sarah had a pretty tough time of things. Before she was 16, she moved 15 different times. She moved into foster placements, she moved into children's homes, She moved into what's called a secure unit, which is where things have gone really wrong, usually, for some young people in the system. And every time she moved, she experienced what Chris has talked about, that foster family taking on. She abandoned her family, her friends, her school. Everything changed every time that she moved. And one of the things that really touched me about what the advocate said that he provided for her was what he called a memory box. And he put photographs of Sarah in this box and school certificates and just wrote little anecdotes about what she'd done in her life. Because one of the things that happens to children in care is they lose their memories quite often. And people that know them also aren't in their lives any longer. So the conversations you might normally have with your mum or your dad or your sister about, do you remember when that happened? There's no one to say, do you remember when too? So a big part of what the Children's Society does is provide that friend, that advocate, that someone who will be consistent in that person's life. And the advocate stayed with Sarah for over 10 years. And when everybody else in Sarah's life changed, that advocate stayed the same. So I remember one time Sarah was moved to Wales to a children's home, and the only professional that stayed in her life was that advocate. Everybody else changed. And that's a huge part of what the Children's Society does. And it's worth just putting a bit of context around who are children in the care system. They come into care for quite often very traumatic reasons. They might have been in a family where their parents were unable to look after them. They might have fled from overseas and seek sanctuary in this country, and the state takes them in. And these are the type of children that come into the care system, and we need to think really long and hard about how not only does the state help those children to recover and deal with whatever's happened in their life before they've entered the care system, but also how they help them to thrive. It shouldn't just be that we teach children in care to kind of tread water, but that we teach them to kind of flourish and be the adults that they have the capacity to be. And that's a big part of what the Children's Society is about and what we do, and I'm sure I'll get a chance to expand on that in the next bit.
Thank you. Thanks. My name's Lem, and I'm a care leaver, I guess. I've spent 18 years in care. Doesn't make me an expert. Doesn't make me right. My testimony may be tainted. Because you've been in care, it doesn't mean you're an expert on what care would need. Just as because you're being operated on doesn't mean to say that you can operate on yourself. Just because you're a prisoner doesn't mean that you know the best way to run prisons. When I was in care, one of the social workers said to me, you know, I want to know what you want. What is it? Which direction do you want to go in? And I thought to myself, I am in an unsafe environment because you're asking me what I want, what I should do with my life, and it's in turmoil. It's your job to know and to tell me what it is that I need. Please don't ask me, because that makes me feel incredibly unsafe, and that's actually what parents do with children. They will tell them what they need, whether they like it or not. I don't want to be consulted when I'm in care. I don't want to be the expert of my experience. I'm not a crash test dummy. I'm not in this place to make this system better for you. I want to be looked after. And I think that a lot of the care that we need to offer the children in care is already there instinctively when you bring up your own children. I'm sometimes surprised by how can the care system be so flawed that you need an advocate, which you do need, which is important, due to the child being moved so many times over so many years. How is it that this government, which is full of parents, you know, assessing consistently on a daily basis how they're going to deal with the child's problems, how they're going to find solutions, using improvisation to deal with any given situation. How is it that when a child comes into the care system, it's suddenly a problem for them, rather than a great opportunity at finding a solution using the tools that they use with their own children? So what is it about the child in care that goes back to the poor houses of the 1800s, to when the Children's Society was started, to when the Foundling Museum was started? What is it about the child in care that makes us generally not do what needs to be done for it on a daily basis? Has it got anything to do with the fact that we are burdened with our past? That in the Victorian days, the idea that a child was without family meant that there was something intrinsically wrong with the child. Dickens saw it. I think our care system needs to see children in care for what they are, counter to that narrative. J.K. Rowling knew it. Harry Potter was a foster child. Superman was adopted. Moses, a real-life person, was adopted. Jesus had two fathers. Muhammad was fostered by his grandparents. James and the Giant Peach, Jane Eyre, David Copperfield, Lisbeth Salander, the girl with the dragon tattoo, Lyra Balakwa in Philip Pullman's Northern Lights. We are throughout popular culture. And if you read those books, they will give you an example as to what we see as children in families who are fostered and as to what foster families' challenges are to be with us. It can actually be interpreted, I'm doing a Radio 4 programme about this as we speak, in reading Harry Potter and the way the Dursleys were with him. Not the best example, but I'm interviewing them, and they gave him space, and they carried a story. Petunia was jealous of Lily, her sister, because her sister was favorited by Petunia's mother. So when Lily dies, Petunia fosters her son and has all kinds of issues that are unresolved, that as her son grows to look like her sister, etc., etc. In other words, my side of this story is incredibly positive. I believe that fostering and adoption is the greatest thing that human beings can do, period, bar anything. And therefore, abuse in fostering and adoption is the worst thing that anybody can do, period. So, you as foster parents and adopting, you are on the front line. And as parents, you're on the front line. And it is not easy. And it is incredible and beautiful. And, you know, those two things sit next to each other as parents. Therefore, they sit next to each other as adoption. But only when our society starts to see children in care as superheroes. By the way, Harry Potter was fundamentally flawed. I mean, he was flawed in many ways. He ran away. He killed people. Do you know what I mean? He caused problems. Think about it, for the Dursleys. And everybody blamed them, didn't they? And they were worried about how they were viewed by other people when it was all going wrong. I think that it is the greatest thing. It's the greatest challenge to you. And it's the greatest thing you can give a child. And I guess that I'm not from an organization. I refuse to do that. Yeah, that's it. For me.
I'll take this one, that's okay. There's an awful lot going on there. I think we've just started to scratch the surface. But one of the things that I want to follow through comes from experience I had a few years ago when the Children's Society, the project I ran, we were asked by a local authority to consult with young people who were in care to say, we're thinking of setting up an independent visiting scheme. Would it be good for you? What would you like? And I can remember kind of interviewing young people and almost consistently what the young people said at that time was, actually, don't give us another adult to relate to. We just want to hang on to the friends that we've got. But we can't hang on to the friends that we've got because every friend that we've got has to be police checked or has to be kind of sanctioned or there has to be a measure of control. And there are friends that social workers deem to be unacceptable and therefore we're not allowed to have contact with them. Sleepovers, any normal kind of behavior like that is not allowed. And it did raise a big question about, is it possible for the state to parent children in the same way that parents will always be different constraints? And I'll pass it on the line and start with Krish.
Oh, it's a big question. So in one sense, yes, the state has to step up, doesn't it? Because children in care are not able to be looked after by their immediate family. And so who is going to take responsibility? And so it does make sense that the state does it. But the state needs to work through families in order to make that happen. There's been a massive shift in the UK over the centuries that we realised that institutional care is not the best place for most children. You know, if I were to die and, you know, my kids couldn't live with my wife or with other people, I wouldn't send them to an orphanage. I'd want them to be in another family, ideally a family that I know. And yet, around the world, slowly we're waking up to that need. Many of the orphanages that exist around the world are actually funded by us lot, the church. And in one sense, it's great. Orphanages are better than kids dying on the streets. But family-based care is the most productive, most wonderful thing that we can give to children. So I do believe the state has a responsibility, but that there is something that we can do as individuals, as families, as churches, to provide that long-term care for children. And we're really passionate, both as a family and as an organisation, that this moving of children around to numerous homes, that's a real problem. And so wherever possible, we're looking for permanency. And for some children, that's adoption, because, you know, you don't run out of the need for care when you hit 17 or 18, when you officially stop becoming a looked-after child. You know, my mother died when I was 40 years old, and I'm 45 now, and I miss her like crazy. You know, we need forever parents. And wherever that's possible for adoption, that's brilliant. But sometimes that's not possible. The law seems to be shifting towards encouraging long-term foster care rather than adoption. And so we're asking us lot to step up and be whatever these children need us to be. And they need us to be the forever parents that are in their lives. So state has a role, but us lot, we've got a specific role that nobody else can replace.
I think from the perspective of some of the children that don't get permanency, which I think is so important. Like, I think we underestimate the importance of relationships when children enter a system. And actually, relationships, as you say, Jim, with friends and with prospective foster parents are probably going to be the most important thing in that child's life. But I think, can the state step up and be a good parent? Yes. Does it have a huge way to go? Yes, it also does. And if I just give you an example of one of the things that the Children's Society is working on at the moment. So we're working on what happens when care leavers fall into debt. And this happens, unfortunately, very, very often. And part of the reason is that they normally are starting life as an adult on their own. And nobody, unless you're in the care system, really does that. You have quite a lot of safety nets around you to catch you if you make a mistake. So if you fall behind on your rent, or if you don't know that you have to pay council tax when you turn 18, or what even council tax is, a lot of people in the care system are in that category. And unfortunately, you can end up in the really strange situation where the state that's meant to be your parent is sending a bailiff round to your house to get a debt that you owe them. And I think we need to fundamentally look at all parts of the state to say, are you thinking about this as a parent would? And if we start from that principle and make some really systematic changes based on that question, the state could really step up and be a much better parent than it is at the moment. And everyone has a duty to kind of look for those examples, both in foster placements and children that potentially aren't that lucky, unfortunately, to kind of say, where are those gaps in the system that treat a child in care like something that needs to be managed rather than someone that needs to be loved and cared for beyond 18, because that isn't the reality of growing up. People don't stop needing the support of a parent at the age of 18. I know I never did. So that's something that needs to be really thought about.
We have to assume that fostering is the best solution for all children. And we have to just look at that really through clear glass, because many of those children, remember, have come from a home. Come from a home with a family in it. Maybe that's not the best way for them. Maybe it is a children's home. Now, the reason that most of us think that children's homes are terrible, we almost do it instinctively. But the reason most of us do that is because we're from families and we understand the value of families. We actually don't understand the value of children's homes. In fact, we have a prejudice against children's homes because society has one against them. Period. The fact is that if a child runs away from a family, maybe the last thing it needs is to be in a family. And that if the state, to get to the point of the question, is going to look after the child, it needs to give a child in care. I'll continue that sentence, but I'll just tell you, a child in care is a child of the state. And therefore, you would think that the state would judge its entire well-being based not on finance, not on X, Y, and Z, not on housing, but on how it treats its child. That's not the case. And the reason that's not the case is because it's not the case for us. It's not the case here. It's not being shouted about here. You know, we are the responsible people for that. The point is that the children's home is an incredibly brilliant, therapeutic place for a child to be, to mend, be fixed, and get all the greatest resources from the government, the psychotherapy, the intense relationship therapy, the this, that, and the other. And maybe think about it. Maybe it's not. Do you know what skills it takes for a child who's been through trauma to be in a house, to open his or her eyes of a morning and then know that they're going to go downstairs to sit in front of a room of strangers who they may or may not be being paid to look after them and also to be good? That skill that a child has done before it's opened its mouth at a breakfast table remains unacknowledged. Now, when we're in the care system in the children's homes, we acknowledge the situation that we're in and the skills between us before we've sat and opened our mouths for breakfast, because we can all see it. Shall I tell you about the... No, I shan't. But the point that I'm making to you is, though fostering is great, to assume that the family is the perfect place for that child to be is to negate the fact that the government closed down the children's homes and began a wholesale fostering, not because fostering was better, but because it was cheaper. By the way, I'm not being negative. I'm not being negative. You should foster if you feel like you need to, and it's a good thing. But I do believe that we do need to know the facts, because otherwise we just think that children are falling out of the trees for us to save and catch them. And actually, I think there's much more to this than that. Sorry. I do love you, and I do speak from a loving place.
So maybe I should qualify my statement. And So I think there is a need for a mixed economy. That you're right, for some children, a children's home is going to be a better solution for them. And sadly, there's a variety of qualities available in children's homes. So some are those therapeutic environments, and some are more, I suppose, a holding pen for a place where fostering hasn't worked.
But that happens in fostering as well.
It does. So, yeah, I totally agree. For some children, a children's home institution could be a good solution. But I guess it depends on the age and stage of the children. There's a whole range of factors, I suppose.
Maybe that begs a different question then about our expectations, because at the moment we've been talking about our expectations of the state and the way in which it relates to the child in care. But I wonder, do we expect enough of young people who are in care, and what should our expectations be of young people in care? I mean, Lem, I think your example is of someone who has achieved, and on the examples that you give, either in fiction or non-fiction, of those people that have been in care who have achieved a great deal, is I think for all of us something to inspire. But do you think, as a society, we expect enough of those children in care?
It's a great question, because it's all about the power of suggestion, and we have this in family. You know, when are you going to get married? You know, when are you going to get you? When are you going to university? Which university? You don't want to go to university, all right? Don't worry. There's a book over there, and it's about universities. And you don't have to look at it. The power of suggestion. You know, your Auntie Jean's getting married. We'll go there next week. You know, what is the power of suggestion for the child in care? We need to suggest. We need to implant that power of suggestion that they are incredible human beings, just as a person, parent will with their child, incredibly flawed and incredibly brilliant at the same time. We need to consistently suggest that that person is going to be incredible, and our aims should be as high, so they will be able to go to university. They will get a great job. By the way, the worst thing that a social worker ever said to me when they asked me, when I said, talking about what I want to do, is to be a social worker. What they did was said, Lem, you could be a social worker and work the system, change it from the inside. So after 18 years of being in care, the social worker, on thinking about what it is that I could do, used their imagination. So what I'm saying is that that is, shows an utter lack of vision for a child. And it's natural that the child would become a social worker, because who's the parent in that child's eyes? It's the social worker. So, sorry. So I think my point is, to answer your question, it's about aspirations. That's the only reason I mentioned Harry Potter. And by the way, success to me, as I said to Jon Snow on Channel 4 News about 6 months ago, when he said the same thing to me, I said instinctively, live on television, I said, the only reason I'm saying that is to prove my point. Success to me is being able to look in the mirror of a morning and know that I'm all right. Because the life I've lived, that's what success is to me. And all the other achievements would all be great if there was one family member, one person, one advocate in the audience when I achieve those things. And actually, I've learned to find them and learn that they are there and learn to trust people and learn to love and be loved. And that's the greatest thing that I've ever done. If you want to know what success is, know how to love and be loved after being in care. And that's the greatest thing that you could ever get.
I'm going to do something really bad now. I'm going to ask a colleague a difficult question. So, Lucy. I mean, a lot of your time is spent meeting with politicians, parliamentarians, kind of policymakers, people that ultimately are making the laws and the legislation and the kind of the power to change things. I mean, over recent years, I mean, do you think that their heart is in the right place, or is it just a question of needing to know more? I mean, what do you think is the direction of travel for our politicians?
Overwhelmingly, I do think their heart is in the right place. I think they, and people at not just the national level, but also at the local level, where it really is more the front line, I think, for children in the care system, they take it very seriously when they take a child into care. As Lem says, they're taking somebody out of a potentially a family environment that might be dysfunctional or neglectful, not because there's not love in that family, but because for whatever reason they can't be looked after. So that's a serious decision to take a child into the care system. But linking this question to your previous one, I think our structural aspirations for young people in the care system are not high enough. And quite often, if you look at kind of indicators, which are a bad proxy, but it's how people measure success, success in the care system is measured by that care leaver not failing, not by achieving what they want. And I think in order for the decision makers to reframe the way they think about care, we need to think about, can that care leaver look in the mirror and say, I'm happy with where I am today? And it doesn't matter if that's a university, if that's a job, if that's a career in poetry, yeah, if that's a career in whatever that care leaver wants to do. But are they achieving what they have the capability to achieve should be our measure for success. Not has that young person gone into the criminal justice system, for example, something they're measured against. So I think we need to have new measures for our children in care, and that'll change what care leavers feel about their lives as well.
Excellent. Well done. Okay, this is a moment for some audience participation, I think, really. So I'd just like you all just to raise one hand. Just keep one hand in the air. Now, what I want you to do is to think about your childhood. So we're talking up to the age of 18 years. And think about how many times you moved during those first 18 years of your life. Okay? So I'm thinking about that in those terms. If you only ever moved once, drop your hand. Or not at all. Or twice. Or three times. Four times. Five times. Six times, seven times, eight times, nine times. I think you get, we'll give you an award, sir, but I mean, you get the picture. For the vast majority of us, our experience in our childhood of growing up is one where moving is not a common experience. For young people in care, whether they're in foster care or they're in children's homes, there is, for many of them, a kind of an experience of rapid movement. I was talking to a young girl the other day. She was 14 years old. She's in care at the moment. And she said, should I haven't moved care very much for a child in care? I've only moved 11 times in the last 2 years. And for her, that was a sense of, that's not too much, because I know other people that move longer. So I'm wondering, kind of, Chris, from do you think that's what's meant by social mobility?
No, that isn't. That shouldn't be what's meant by social mobility. And we're asking people like you to consider changing the way that works by stepping forward and becoming the kind of permanent parents that these children need. So one way, it seems to me that a lot of people don't consider themselves as possible foster parents. They think fostering is for people that need the money. And, you know, if you've got a job, if you've got a career, if you've got a profession, well, you wouldn't foster because that's for people that can't get a job another way. Same with adoption. A lot of people just think adoption's the third worst way to have a child. There's natural birth, and if that doesn't work, well, there's IVF, and if IVF doesn't work, there's always adoption. The problem with all of those ways of thinking about it is I'm the main person here. I'm going to either get money or I'm going to get the child of my dreams. And we think we want to put children's needs ahead of ours. That's part of the job of being a grown-up, isn't it? And so we're asking people to consider, look, is there room in your heart, room in your life to be the loving, permanent parent that these children need? And that means lots of us could do it that might have never thought about it. You could be a brilliant parent as a single. I'd far rather a child had one parent that was there for them than have no permanent parents. You might have kids that have left the nest and you think, okay, we could spend the rest of our retirement, you know, traveling around Europe, visiting those places we always dreamed of. Or you could think, could I seriously make a difference in a child's life? Could I be their champion? Could I help them fulfill all the dreams that the state doesn't have for them? Is that you? And particularly with adoption, there's a really powerful way that you could be helping them with that lack of social mobility, I guess, in that instead of them keeping on getting moved on from one semi-permanent residence to another, could you say, no, we are it. We are your forever family. For better or for worse, for whatever life has thrown at you, we're going to be there for the rest of your life. That would make such a big difference. So we're passionate about it, and we think, you know, there are people in this room that could do that. And if you can't do it, at least you could be the support for another family. We consider our church our extended family. Everyone in our church is an auntie or an uncle to our foster or adopted and our birth kids. And so those memory books that you talked about earlier, sometimes when we're emergency foster parents, an emergency can mean anything from a week to 3.5 years. That was how long we had one child for an emergency until she could go on to permanency. But when we put a memory book together and we gave it to her at a big party that everyone that in her life came to, there was pictures of people that had sat next to her in church because she didn't do so well in a service, but someone would draw her a little picture to keep her attention, and that was in the memory box. Or there was someone there that had included her on all the birthdays. So whenever there was a birthday, they got an extra present, or Easter, or a postcard from abroad. She was important enough to them, even though she was just our foster daughter. She was their foster niece, I suppose, and so she was included. So there's a great way that we can keep the resilience of foster families and adoptive families by the rest of us wrapping around and giving the support that we need. So we think, you know, social mobility shouldn't mean a child moving 11 times in 2 years. It should mean that they get to accomplish all that I think God has in store for them.
Just another question which I'm going to open up to any of you really to answer really. And that is, how do you think the UK compares to other countries, either in Europe and other parts of the world, when it comes to the state providing care for children? How do we rate? How do we fare?
I'm sure there's statistics on this, but I'm sure you might know the statistical side of things, but having travelled around the world and seen children's homes around the world, I think Africa does really well in this area, but not through the state, but through fostering children between families. It's something that's been happening in Africa for a long time. I think it's been happening over the world for a long, long time. It's not documented as official fostering, but that's precisely what it is. In fact, unofficial fostering preceded fostering. And the act of taking in a child whose parents had died, et cetera, is not just an African thing. It's a European thing. It's happened all over the world. It happens wherever there is people with immediate compassion and willingness to care. And that's here as much as it's in Africa. However, Norway's better, I think. And yeah, I think we're doing all right. I think it's better now than it's ever been in this country. I think we're burdened with the missionary gene. And this is not to... Okay, so here's the proof. Just so that you know that I'm on your side. Philomena. You know, the entire 60s of adoption and fostering, you know, was often based on lies. It was run by the church. It was done all over Africa. And it was done all over England. And it was done in Spain as well. So it's important to acknowledge, it's important to acknowledge that this process is what precedes where we are right now, so that you can see it in hopefully a clearer, more honest, and more aware light of what it is that you're walking into and embracing, which remains the most beautiful thing that a human being can do, in my opinion. However, to not know those things is deeply offensive, and it means that you will walk into the problem and act as if it's the first time it's happened, and it's not. Fast-track adoption happened in the 1960s. You must remember this. And it must be discussed openly. Because it took 40 years for that to come to light. Because those people took 40 years. Because those children took 40 years to say, where am I from? Etc., etc. So I think what I want most of all is for us to be educated into how we've got to this situation that we're in right now, of thinking of children in care as this and fostering to be important, etc., etc., etc. Yeah, that's it, really. And I say this with love.
Thanks, Liam. You're so right about the kind of kinship caring that happens naturally within often non-European countries. So children being brought up by aunties or uncles or grandparents is absolutely fantastic. And yet there are some children that don't have that wider family around them. And that's one of the challenges that we're finding. Even over here, we're struggling to recruit people from ethnic minority backgrounds to be foster carers or adopted parents because it's for the kids that don't have those kinship carers available to them. And that's still true in parts of Africa too. And so there are still large numbers of children in institutional care and not the good types that you mentioned, but sometimes, you know, not great times. So groups like Lumos, you might have come across, it's a charity that J.K. Rowling founded and is using a lot of the funds that she generated through the Harry Potter series, is trying to help countries move from that only institutional care to a mixture of family-based care and institutional care. We are interesting, actually, the adoption thing is changing. So we're part, Home for Good is my charity, and we're part of a global network that's encouraging local people to foster and adopt children in different countries. So not bringing kids from other parts of the world. I think there's some real challenges in that because often there's not enough cultural literacy. Often these children aren't actually orphaned. They've got family that could care for them, but when there's a possibility that they might have a more financially secure future somewhere else, sometimes families make difficult decisions and give their children away. But we're encouraging local families to do fostering and adoption. And that's a big change. So we're working with a group in Singapore. Singapore had no fostering, only institutional care. And now the church is kind of waking up. And that's a really big deal in Chinese culture to care for someone else's child. We're working with a group in Ukraine. Many of you will remember those Eastern European orphanages where lots of children in one room, not enough physical or mental stimulation. So we're seeing loads of those orphanages close and children being moved into family-based care instead. And the church is part of it and playing a really key part of that. And so we're delighted. But the interesting challenge is America, Canada and the UK are some of the only places where there's still large numbers of adoptions happening. And we're talking about, again, older children getting adopted and getting that forever family. So last year in Holland, there were 50 adoptions in the whole country. And in the UK, there were 3,000. So there's still a culture of people saying, you know what, I'm not just going to provide you temporary care. I'm going to be your forever family. That's still happening in some countries. But the trend is towards foster care instead of adoption at the moment in many places.
I think that's a really interesting point about kind of changes in other countries. I mean, I can remember going into Romanian orphanage the year after Ceausescu fell, and it was the most traumatic sight and experience I've ever had. And I was conscious that perhaps one of the reasons things got so bad there is that the message there from the state was, give us your children. We will take care of your children. And that wasn't care. That was something else. But it was the state taking that responsibility or that accountability. So we're back to this kind of notion of where does the state fit? Because as a society, we are instinctively very resistant to the idea of the state intervening in our family. And those of us who are parents and have children of our own are very resistant to the idea of the state having any intervention. So where do we think the state should be in relation to those children?
I think one of the areas where the state can have a much more active role is in prevention. And unfortunately, in a time of austerity, the prevention is the first part of the puzzle that goes, and it's one of the most important parts. So if you are in a family that's struggling, it's not always the best solution to take that child into care, but what extra support can be put around that family to help them work? And a lot of that is done through the kind of dedicated frontline professionals that represent the state that feels like a very scary word. But in reality, that can be someone supporting someone with parenting an adolescent that's really difficult to manage. And actually, I think a big part of what the puzzle that the state is missing is that early intervention prevention tool to stop so many children going into the care system where there might be an option to support that family. And I think, unfortunately, the trend is moving in the other direction for some families that just need an extra amount of support. And we need to get away, I think, from the frame of the state being this kind of scary monster that's going to come into your life and take your children, when, and maybe it's put that on itself in part, I imagine. But I think it can actually have a role in supporting families to be better parents, be better children. And that is a big part of what we've forgotten, I think, in the journey to getting those children into care in the first place. So I think that's a big part of what they can do.
Do you want to say anything on that?
Or? Yeah. I wanted to say that the state's us. You know, we voted them in. So for me, it's like they're actually a reflection of what we think of children in care. And for me, it's about convincing people out there that those needs are great, and to put pressure on the state to make it a vote winner. You know, there was a time that this conversation in a festival like this would never have happened. It's incredible that it is. There was another one I did the other day, the Bradford Literature Festival. They were talking about literature and kids in care, and we had somebody from the Children's Society there as well. You know, this is the times are changing, you know. But for me, it's not about saying that the state is it's not about blaming the state. Because by the way, parents have been blaming social workers for years. Foster parents as well as parents who've been intervened with social workers. We should be paying social workers a lot more money because they're looking after the greatest asset of any society, and it's a child. By the way, if we get rid of the state and we offer all this to the private companies which are set up with good intentions, what we have is the scattergun approach of things breaking down in lots of different places that are very difficult to track. I speak as somebody who thinks of the girl that was impregnated by a foster father. So, and there are many, 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 you know, car crash stories that I could share with you, as we all can. In fact, anecdotal evidence I always find slightly irritating because it takes us away from the simple fact that we need to do a good job, and we need to raise our government to do that good job, and we need to tell other people how incredible kids in care are and incredibly flawed at the same time, how much they need love in the foster care and in the children's homes. And we need to change people out there for the state to change. But negating the responsibility from the state is more political than it has got anything to do with actually fixing what it is the central problem, in my opinion.